Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Buddhist Center podcast with me, Chandradasa. It's lovely to be back. We're slightly erratic at the moment with these episodes, fitting them in when we can. There's actually a whole backlog of episodes that we'd love to do with people, so hopefully we'll get to them soon. And as we come towards the changing seasons here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, in the Northern Hemisphere, we're moving into the fall or autumn. And it feels appropriate, actually, to be reconvening the podcast to talk about beauty. Beauty in a particular way, which we'll hear about in a little second. As usual, if you like these podcasts, if you like the stories you hear about people's lives and how inspiring it is to just hear people talk about Buddhist practice in the 21st century, please tell a friend. There are a billion, million, squillion podcasts. That's the official number of podcasts that there are. It's a bit like a Mahayana Sutra. There are just like endless eons of universes of podcasts now. Everybody has a podcast. So it's very difficult to be found. And the best way is if somebody you know and trust tells you, you should listen to this conversation. And we're very lucky because that happens with our podcast quite a bit from what we hear. But yeah, please tell a friend and share it with another person. In these conversations, we try usually to exemplify not just the vibrant life of a particular Dharma community, the Triratna Buddhist community in this case. We also ask deeper questions, hopefully anybody can relate to. What's possible to do with our lives? How can we form connections with other humans, with other life in general on this planet? And usually we don't have to reach too far to find a lot of beauty and meaning in this. And today's no exception. I'm very happy to be joined by our friend Hartley Wolf, who's been a guest on the podcast in the past year or two, probably coming up for 2 years now. A little while ago, we did a project with Hartley where he was talking about a beautiful film he made set at Alfoxden Park, the historic home for a year in 1797, I think, of William and Dorothy Wordsworth, who together formed an incredibly influential creative circle with their neighbour Samuel Taylor Coleridge in basically reinventing English poetry and inventing English romanticism. That house is now owned and run by an intrepid band of Triratna Buddhists who are gradually remaking it as a home for the Dharma, for meditation and the arts. In itself, it's an amazing project. We'll link to the episode and the film itself in the show notes. But that's not really why we're here today, although it does have a connection because we met Hartley there pursuing both of those realms, pursuing Buddhist Dharma practice, pursuing his art practice, and finding points of connection between them. So this time Hartley's here with some friends and delightful co-conspirators to talk about his new photography book slash project, Portraits of Samadhi. So welcome to you, Hartley, and a big welcome for the first time to the podcast to my friends Maitri Jyoti and Bhadra, and also to Eugene Furness, who I'm delighted to be meeting for the first time. And for once, Eugene, I got to see a beautiful picture of you in advance, so maybe we'll hear more about that in a little bit. But first, welcome to all of you.
Thanks, Chandradasa. I've been looking forward to chatting with you again about another of my creative projects. Yeah, and I'm looking forward especially actually to, well, having the opportunity to talk about the project with you guys in a little bit more depth, because of course I interviewed you a bit after I photographed you, which we'll get into, but yeah, it'll be nice to unpack things further. So yeah, thanks, Chandradasa.
And welcome to you, Maitri Jyoti. Is this your first ever podcast of any kind?
Yeah.
And she's, folks, she's loving it. She's loving it. You should see her face.
Yeah, I just came. Hartley invited me. It was to do with the meditation. I really enjoyed it. I found it quite a novel and unique experience. Yeah, I'm happy to share about that. Yeah.
Fantastic. Eugene, are you a podcast pro? Have you been on podcasts before?
I have actually been on two podcasts before.
Ooh. Which podcast have you been on?
One was a mental health one, Bristol-based, back a few years during the pandemic. And then more recently was, I recorded myself saying some things on another Buddhist podcast in a different tradition. So I'm not completely new.
Oh, great.
I love podcasts anyway, so.
Well, welcome to this one. And Bhadra, have you done podcasts before?
No, this is absolutely the first time. Fascinated to see the mode that we're going into and how it all works.
Well, that's great, because you and I have sat in many rooms, haven't we, over the years, having big conversations about things and setting the world to rights. So maybe we'll do some of that here. I don't know.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Exactly. We will find out. I guess the best place to start is usually at the beginning with the origins of the project itself, Hartley. I watched you make that film towards the end and sort of put the finishing touches of editing it. And I heard talking to you about it, the amount of care that you just put into it. It was clearly much more than just a job. There was some deep-seated expression happening that was infectious. Like, I loved talking to you about it. I came away feeling inspired. We ended up doing a lot more than just a podcast, right? We came to do a podcast. We ended up making a whole website about your work. It was that good. So I look forward to all the work this is going to generate, no doubt. Why did you decide to hone in on photographing people in meditation in a still context? So not moving image, still image. What was that about?
Yeah. Well, firstly, thanks for what you just said about your observations of me working on the film project. You say it was more than a job. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, it's not like I was getting paid to do that. It was 100% a passion project. And obviously the same with this one. So why photography as opposed to film, I suppose, is what you're asking. I mean, interestingly, after beginning this project, I did actually start to imagine it as a video project. But I think there's something about the moment with photography, isn't there? With a video, you have the opportunity to watch someone continuously. But it was capturing that moment of expression, I think, in meditation, which is what originally inspired me with this idea. So I think my mind just naturally went to photography. And as it turns out, which I'm sure we'll go into, that actually moment of choosing when to press the shutter, when to capture the image while I was photographing my sitters actually became very interesting, if not more so. And, you know, the project kind of almost became about that as well, about that relationship between me and the sitters and this whole experience of me watching someone meditate and choosing the moment, you know, watching their face and being like, yeah, like there. So that's kind of naturally where my mind went when I first came up with the idea.
It's very interesting already. There's a kind of narrative element there, isn't there, where you're choosing to tell a particular story when you decide to press that button. I'm guessing it's not necessarily a conscious story. You're not sitting thinking, oh, this face means this or this face means that. But I hadn't quite thought of that, that it wouldn't just be a sort of mindfulness practice for you, that you would have to make a conscious decision to click. This is the moment of time I'm going to capture.
Yeah, well, I mean, I still felt like a mindfulness practice to me because I was trying to stay as aware of myself as I could throughout the whole sit. I mean, I couldn't not really. And there was something that felt very alive. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear if this was the same for you too, but there's something that felt very alive for me in these moments about my relationship with the sitter in that moment. I was just very aware of the fact that here is someone in front of me meditating and I'm here watching them, choosing the moments to take the photo. Continuously aware of what impact this whole context, my presence, them being watched, may or may not be having on the meditation. But yeah, there was a unique bond or connection going on there, which I experienced, which you don't normally experience in group meditation. So it did feel very mindful for me, just perhaps not in the way that you might expect.
Sounds very beautiful. I mean, there's so many images in my mind now. I'm like, oh, is it looking in a mirror? Except the mirror's got a different face coming back at you. There is something about meditation that can have that mirror-like quality as well, can't there? Where you just sit with whatever is going on. And also, I suppose they're aware of you. Even though their eyes are closed and they're meditating, they're aware of you as another being. So there's something very relational going on, isn't there, in the room that's not completely separate from what happens when you meditate with others, because meditating with others is different from meditating on your own, but it is a bit different because there's this particular focused awareness. Bhadra, Eugene, Majjajyoti, what was it like to be watched in meditation? Why did you agree to this when it was suggested?
That is a question I've asked many times, but well, I was fascinated to see what would be captured for a start in terms of an image. And for myself, it was quite an interesting process of consciously having to work harder to turn inwards. Usually my meditation would include a sense of the environment I was in and what was going on around me, particularly if I was leading a meditation. So to just sit in meditation with Hartley's presence and all his kit around us, well, I had to take a particular approach to working a bit harder to just sort of let go into one's internal experience and let Hartley do whatever he was going to do. So, yeah, it was an interesting challenge. I appreciated that Hartley gave us that opportunity to play in that unusual space, really. So, thank you, Hartley.
And Majjajyoti, you're quite an experienced meditation teacher as well as just meditator. What was it like for you to have this experience of being the subject, somebody's subject, when you were meditating?
Well, I guess I said yes out of curiosity, because it's something I've never done before, to, you know, say yes to someone witnessing me meditate where they have their eyes open and they're observing me. So I had no particular expectations on how the meditation was going to go. But when I came into the space, it looked really professional. You know, you had this big thing behind me, which I think helps the light. I don't know what it's called. Yeah, it's
a black backdrop.
Yeah, big black backdrop. And then you have the camera in front and then something black behind. And as I sat there, I don't know, a particular sort of space was created. It had this sense of being in a little cocoon, like a protection. I felt like I was working creatively and it didn't take much work to think, oh, look, I'm being held. There's something protecting behind me and there's something protecting in front of me. And I'm meditating in this like small space and it's just Hartley. And you were quite gentle in how you explain things and you created a really safe space, actually. And I think a lot goes by the space you create. So I quite quickly felt safe, grounded and trusting. And my meditation, I became absorbed quite quickly. It didn't feel dissimilar to quite a concentrated meditation on retreat. And that really surprised me. I've reflected on it since, and I think it just gave me this clarity of intention. You know, Hartley has invited me here to meditate. I'm sitting in this space. I'm being witnessed by someone. And just allow that, just release into that and just see what happens. It's almost like you've got to be curious because it's a new way of meditating. Yeah, I quite enjoyed that. And the little clicks of the camera, they were a bit like the meditation bells when they just say presence, presence, you know, click. You know, so every few moments, and they wouldn't be timed, so they were spontaneous. So I had that reminder of being present with this little really gentle click. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a really interesting experience. I had an experience of samadhi. I felt like it.
Did you really? Oh, well, yeah. Good. So the title is valid then. It's not just an aspirational title.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear that you felt like in a safe cocoon, like safely held. Really good to hear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This could become a practice now. Hartley, you could take this on tour. You do retreats where you just come to be photographed meditating.
Be watched.
Yeah. And Eugene, did you have easy emotional response to the experience of getting to do this? Was it complex? What was it like for you?
It was definitely very straightforward, generally. I mean, I said yes because I met you before. You're a very approachable, lovely person. And I was just interested by it. I thought it was a really good idea. It was really good. I remember the afternoon, the day when I did it. So I remember I was having a really challenging few days and I hadn't stopped or reflected at all. I was like really in my head. And then when I did the shoot, it was the first time that I'd actually meditated in a while. And I just felt a lot better. And I think that really helped with your presence. You were very down to earth. You felt very approachable, very tranquil. The Buddhist center itself is a very tranquil, calming space anyway. And yeah, I didn't mind you being in front of me at all. Not that I like didn't care about your presence, but I kind of almost didn't notice it. You were just very in the zone, I think. And I was also very in the zone. That definitely helped.
That's great. I'm interested, Hartley, in if we wind it back a bit from people talking about their experience of sitting, what was your process for finding people and engaging with them? Did you ask more people to sit? Did some people not make the cut? That's indelicate to say. You know, did some of it just not work? Like, what was it energetically you were looking for? And how did you go about setting up these very particular, quite intimate experiences of sitting? And in a way, it's a context where you need to trust each other a bit.
Yeah, that's really true. I wasn't seeking anyone in particular. I think I was deliberately trying to cast a wide net because I wanted a variety, of course. I mean, this project began while I was living at Alphoxham. So it started with Alphoxham community members. And then I continued it when I came to Bristol. So the series is a combination of Bristol Sangha members and Alphoxham community members. So to begin with, my pool was just the Alphoxham community and who I could persuade to dedicate a portion of their extremely precious free time to this project. I mean, I suppose that was helped by the fact that meditation is something that everybody aims to do every day anyway. So I could try and spin it as well. You know, it's like this is your daily meditation, but you're just doing it for me in front of a camera and two screaming bright lights. And the Alphoxham community is quite varied already, quite diverse. But yeah, there's not anyone that didn't make the cut. I mean, a lot of people, not, I mean, obviously not everyone agrees, understandably. It is a bit of a strange request, and one which really, I think, does take some measure of courage, perhaps differently for different people, certainly for certain individuals in the project. But I think what you've made me realize in asking that question, Chandradasa, is that I also became aware of, well, I guess the expectations that I was bringing in and what I was maybe unconsciously looking for in different faces. And yeah, there are certain sitters that I was more interested in than others. And the ones that I was more interested in, unsurprisingly, tended to be the ones who were more expressionate visually. So I suppose that's something interesting to notice as well. You know, I might be more visually interested in someone that's wearing maybe what's going on for them internally on their face a lot more clearly, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything at all. I mean, someone who's completely blank. And, you know, the subtler expressions, I think, are arguably more interesting really anyway, if you really take them in. There was really such a range, even though the differences were subtle. Energetically, the difference was noticeable. You know, the difference between you, Eugene, for example, your expression was pretty consistently just this really, really pleasant, calm, gentle smile you wore on your face.
In this photo, I look really serious and miserable.
Sure, have a look.
Yeah.
You think that's miserable? Because
subtly, yeah.
Oh, well, actually, yes, I suppose you've got a bit of a, your brow is a bit knotted there.
Yes.
No, that's true. That's, you've reminded me, actually. You're right, because your expression did change. This is another thing that's interesting, Chandradasa. Some people's expressions were consistent the whole way through, which I found quite difficult to believe. And other people changed. And Eugene, I remember you changed. I mean, the image that I chose here is one where I think it's a bit complex, because I think your eyebrows say one thing, but I think your mouth says something different.
Yeah, that's true.
But I remember for other parts of the meditation, you had more of this smile, like enjoying the calm and just like the moment.
We'll try and share a couple of the images maybe of our guests so people can see these pictures. They can judge for themselves the difference between Eugene's eyebrows and his mouth. Badra, what was it like for you when you saw your image? What did you think of yourself when you looked in the mirror of the book and saw back this, I don't know, version of past Badra, who at a certain point was meditating and was captured? Did it capture your soul? Was it the classic photography thing of it captured your soul?
Of course. I think one of the things is that when I'm photographed and when I'm here, you know, I can see myself on the screen as well. It's a different image. You know, I'm still 16, as you know. Here I am. In reality, when somebody photographs me, I'm an old man. And that's quite shocking to kind of witness, really, in a photograph. So there's something of that, a kind of reality check. I was curious to see the photographs just because I have no idea, of course, what I look like when I'm meditating. So it was curious to see what that was like.
That is very interesting. It had not occurred to me that you may see a different version of yourself from the version of yourself that you hold in your head. And of course, everybody has an ideal age that they think they are. I didn't know yours was 16. That's very interesting. We'll do another podcast about that.
Funnily enough, Maitri Jyoti is currently looking at her image and a grimace did pass off.
I can see that on the screen. You don't usually see yourself meditating, so there's a revelation. But there is that other layer of like, how do you carry an image of yourself in your head? Yeah. Which is often the case when people hear themselves on the podcast. They sound different from how they hear, of course, how they hear themselves in their own head. Mm. And is that grimace, Maitri Jyoti? Is the grimace softening? Can you love the picture of Maitri Jyoti who's meditating in that book?
Yeah, I guess. I think I identify with myself as being quite friendly and quite warm and smiley. So it's hard to see me with such a blank expression and with my face just really neutral. Maybe you don't see that as neutral.
Well, but I do. I remember thinking the same thing, actually, because I experience you as a warm, friendly person. And you're right, your expression is much more neutral there than you normally wear it.
Yeah.
Is that a surprise to you, Maitri Jyoti, that that is your expression when you meditate?
No surprise. It's just a bit odd to see, you know? However, it's more reassuring for me meditating, for me to have that face. I really did feel like during the session, I really let go and I really absorbed and I was grounded and I was opening up. Something was happening and it surprised me and I just allowed that. I guess when we go inward, we just find parts of ourselves open up and it doesn't matter about this thing we present to the world. If I need to present myself as happy or cheerful, there's a layer of that that really drops off. But yeah.
I was just going to say, one of the things that's come to me since we did that session was that I thought it'd be really interesting, your next project, Hartley, to actually photograph us sitting in front of our individual shrines. Because for me, you know, a lot of what supports me or where I know the meditation space somehow is created by the shrine that I'm sitting with. So there's something of that. So the photograph, just an isolated face, I think that doesn't really reveal much of the internal experience somehow.
That's really interesting to hear you say that, Badra, because I realize I'd not considered that. Compared with what you've just suggested there, I suppose you could say my approach was fairly clinical in a sense. I mean, for obvious reasons, I wanted to make sure that it was the same for each city. You know, the context was the same, same lighting, same backdrop. So the emphasis was entirely on the expression. Everything else is controlled and the expression that we're looking at is what changes. But you're right. The whole full picture is, as you say, it's your shrine, which says so much about you as a practitioner, and meditating in front of your shrine is part of your practice. And actually, that does remind me one thing that Alice said in her quote in the book. She asked me why I didn't photograph the whole body rather than just photographing the face. And when she said that, I was like, well, yeah, of course, because we meditate with our bodies, don't we? Not with just our face. So
I was going to mention that, actually. I read Alice's quote the other day and I thought, oh, yeah, that's a point. You do actually show quite a bit. It's not just headshots that are like chest and probably torso, like top of the torso. They kind of look portraits, classic portraits. When I read Alice's thing, it reminded me of my friend Paramananda, who, when he teaches meditation, always likes to reference Dogen. And Dogen had this whole emphasis on the lower half of the body, particularly the legs, the super importance of the legs in meditation. I was on a retreat with Paramananda recently, so this is still in my head. It made me think, that was a really interesting idea, Badra, that you could pair pictures of people's shrines with pictures of their faces when they're meditating. It'd be really lovely to see the different portrait that would emerge from pictures of people's objects. What it made me think of was people almost superimposed onto the roots and trunks of trees or something. Just like there's something living that's off camera. There's something alive. And I guess in this case, it's the lower bit. Eugene, when you take in the picture that appears of you in this book, does it seem like you? How does it sit in relation to your idea of you?
Well, the first thing to say is that that was me over a year ago, and now I'm not clean shaven anymore. And I'm in my 20s. So yeah, already that's a bit different. It's an interesting thing about like looking yourself in an image. Don't know if anyone here or listening has seen The Crown, but there's an episode where it's about Winston Churchill having his painting done, and he hates the way he appears in the painting. It's that kind of thing, like not necessarily that you hate yourself, but it's not always that when you look at yourself in an image, it lines up with who you think you are. But I say for me, I say it does. I have, unfortunately, a resting serious face, which will probably always be the case. So I definitely have it there. But it seems like a resting serious face, deep in meditation face. I guess I did say I was miserable, but I do seem happy. Like I know myself. And I am wearing a Choose Love shirt because that day I was going to Pride. So not all bleak and horrible. Yeah, but it's definitely interesting. And it's like looking back at myself even a year ago and how different and maybe similar I am.
RSF. I haven't heard of RSF before, resting serious face. That's great. That's much nicer than the traditional, the other one of that. It made me think, actually, when you were talking there, I suppose there is something about looking at these pictures of yourself. Maybe it's the same for any image. I think in The Crown, don't they end up burning the portrait, if I remember rightly, like his wife? Oh, that's terrible. Please don't burn this book. This is too beautiful a book to burn. But it is almost like a loving kindness practice of taking yourself in. It's almost like the first stage of the metta-bhavana. It's like, oh, somebody took a picture of me, and whether I like it or not, that is an aspect of me. Of course, it's not all of you. It's only you in a moment in time. But there is something about it. It's quite a strong reflection back of, can you love that person when you look at them? Badra, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I think that's true. It felt quite transgressive somehow to be looked at while you're meditating. Because I think certainly when I teach meditation, I have this sort of etiquette. Once we go into the practice and people's eyes are closed, I don't look around unless there's a lot of noise going on with somebody, obviously not comfortable or something's happening. I will kind of open my eyes at that point. But generally, when I'm teaching, I'll feel into the space, but I don't look. So it's quite particular to actually sort of look and be looked at. Feels quite unusual. It kind of breaks the rules of the meditation space somehow.
Rebel meditation. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's like your brand, Badra. Rebel meditation. There's one other bit of the book, I suppose, that I would hate to leave out, which is the words, right? So there are these lovely images. I'm sure we'll talk more about the images, but I was really struck, again, flicking through it just yesterday. There's David, who appears in the book, and he's got this really lovely quote from Alan Watts, basically. He says, "When I meditate, it's like washing my mind, bathing myself in my experience." Alan Watts says, "You make a bowl of dirty water clean by letting it settle, and then light shines through and you get clarity." It's really fantastic. But how important were the words, partly when you were starting to move from the kind of photography phase into now I'm making an object and doing something with this work?
Yeah, well, I think I just wanted to provide a bit more of a full experience for the viewer, for the reader. And I know that if I were looking at these photographs, I would just be begging to know a little bit more about what was going on behind that expression. So I think the quote was my way of sort of trying to achieve that. When I was originally conceiving this idea, I was imagining these images hung like wall size in an exhibition space. And actually, the vision for that came from an exhibition I saw years and years ago. I can't remember what the gallery was, but they were huge photographic portraits of chimpanzees. And it was just the chimpanzees' faces, but there were all these different chimpanzees' faces around the room, and they were enormous. And so I imagined the same thing with this. I just wanted these massive faces. But also part of that was I thought, well, maybe you could also be hearing people actually speaking while you're looking at these images in the exhibition space, you know, out of speakers in the ceiling or something. You can actually hear people's voices talking, which is why I actually did audio recordings of all the interviews I did with people. So it ended up being printed text in a book, but that was also part of the original vision.
And not to forget that you did actually create an exhibition within the Shrine Room at the Bristol Buddhist Centre, which was fantastic. So we had a room, the Shrine Room, adorned with all these images around the whole space for quite a few months.
That's right. I mean, before that, they hung in the Alfoxden Tana Cafe at Butterfield the year before. The pictures had loads of really great responses then. And then likewise in the Bristol Buddhist Centre, a lot of great responses too. And a couple of my friends, they did say, as soon as they walked into the Shrine Room, maybe it was for an evening, like a Sangha night or something, with the expectation or the intention to meditate. And then they see their face on the wall. They're like, ah, I've now got to get used to seeing my face on this wall in the Shrine Room while I meditate.
Yeah, I guess it's like become a movie star or something. You walk down the street and a bus goes past you with your face on it. So, Maitri Jyoti, I was quite struck in your quote. You talked about ethics and the effect of meditation on your life. I thought that was really interesting. There's something about the light in your face in that photograph. You've got generally quite a light, open face. And I thought you talked about light and the Amitabha sunset, but then you talked about ethics, and I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I appreciated being asked. The follow-up question was like, why do you meditate? Because I just answered spontaneously from a deep place, because I had quite a rich meditation at that time. Yeah, I have found in my life, in my meditation practice, that meditating regularly, you know, committing to that, has just had the strongest effect on my ethical life. Just being more sensitive, being more human, being more resourced, just integrated, more positive emotion. If I had to kind of narrow it down to what's had the biggest effect on my ethical life, and there's many ways we can work around that. We can talk to friends, we can explore the Dharma, but the main cornerstone for me has been meditation, kind of growing that awareness to myself, other people, you know, the difference in my interpersonal relationships, and just that sensitivity. And it's just enacted change, really. So I always appreciate being asked that question so I can re-remind myself. I often think our practice is re-remembering what has meaning and standing on that, really, living our life through that, really. Yeah. And with the Amitabha sunset, that was, you know, the kit you had. Yeah, it's about working creatively with your conditions. I walked into the room, I thought, I haven't done modelling, I haven't done acting. You know, you could look at it and think, oh my God, and I've got to sit in the middle of all this professional kit and meditate. But there was a space created in the sense that I knew people had come before me and meditated there in that space. And I knew people were coming after.
The seat was already warm.
The seat was already warm. So there was an atmosphere, an energetic atmosphere. And then you created an energetic atmosphere and how you introduced that. So, yeah, when I sat there, I had this kit around me. And then I had this sense of, okay, what's this like? Just feel into the experience without overlaying it with thoughts, thinking, oh, this is too clinical. And it actually felt, oh, I feel safe in a cocoon. And I have this connection with Amitabha, you know, the red Buddha of light, Western Buddha of love and compassion. And I thought, oh, he's associated with the sunset. This feels like I'm sat in a sunset. There was some sort of warmth coming from the lighting. And so,
a real
electrical warmth. So I was just kind of working with that creatively. And then that was moving into the practice. So yeah, whenever we meditate, we have to work creatively with our conditions, whether it's sound or comfort in our bodies, anything where we're working with conditions as creatively as we can. So yeah, I enjoyed that kind of challenge, really.
This kind of project, there's layers and layers and layers of stuff. The more we talk, the more there is to explore with it. I was just thinking there, but there's sort of three levels immediately. There's you as the artist, Hartley, and there's the people who were your subjects, who had photographs taken, and then there's the reader. There's the person who's looking at the book. And of course, you move between all of those, the artist. That's a subject, actually. You don't appear in the book. You didn't do a self-portrait. That was an interesting choice not to make.
Can you imagine me meditating and then me somehow pressing the button on the camera when I think my face is doing something?
You could just set it up at random to take a look.
Maybe.
But anyway, I was struck by these kind of three modes. And maybe from the, I suppose my job in this is to represent the reader. When you sent me the book, I took some time and kind of just sat with the book. I wasn't meditating, but it was definitely not just flicking through any old piece of media. I thought, okay, this book sort of is asking a question of you in terms of attention already. Just the fact that it's big faces looking at you. You couldn't turn the page. You can't ignore this person. They're making eye contact with you, even though their eyes are closed. And, you know, I found the expressions quite strong and quite surprising. And I could feel myself wanting to make assumptions about what was going on for the person in meditation. And we talked about this a bit earlier. It's a classic phenomenon on retreat, right? Where you start to read into other people's faces when they sit, particularly if it's over days, you just line up with each other every day. People generally sit in the same place and you open your eyes and you look at everyone and they're all doing it right and you're not doing it right. You're the only person who's distracted.
Yeah.
And also you start to make up stories. We almost can't help it. We just make up stories about what's going on for people and we've no idea. We've actually no idea. So in a way, they become like a canvas for all of our biases and sometimes insecurities and projections, I guess. I'm wondering if you were aware of that dynamic very much when you were in the room and if it did ask questions of you as an artist, did it change your sense of the relationship between your intention and the experience? Did you go into the room thinking, I'm doing one thing and then find yourself suddenly in a different experience because there's another person there and it keeps changing?
Well, actually, one thing that struck me, again, something that I haven't really thought about until now, but I know all of these people and readers and viewers don't necessarily know all of these people. So that's one thing that's kind of got me thinking already. My awareness of being an observer almost became the artwork in itself as well, really. I definitely did go in just with the intention of just capturing facial expressions. But then, as you say, once I was in it, I was then experiencing the process itself and I guess to an extent aware of what I might have been looking for, but trying not to look for anything. And I'm looking at this picture of Jai Raja on the cover. I chose his face for the cover because for me, this is quite a striking image. I mean, firstly, I think you've got the details of his face and I really like the way that they capture the light. There's a lot of definition to his face. It's a nicely defined and high contrast image. So I think in terms of drawing the eye, I think it makes a good cover image. But I think for me, Jai Raja's expression there does represent the depth of his practice as I sort of experience it and as I know him as a person. But again, not everybody looking at this image will know him. So are they going to be looking at this face and thinking, oh, there's someone with a deep practice? Or are they going to be seeing something else? You know, I've got a very intimate relationship with Jai Raja because I lived with him at Alfoxen for 3.5 years. You know, he and I know each other quite closely. So there's probably all manner of things that I'm projecting onto this face because I know the person. And so I'm reading things into this expression. I'm reading a seriousness, a sincerity, a maturity. But how someone who doesn't know the person will read that facial expression, I have no idea.
That's the great thing about art, isn't it? It's like your children, you send them out into the world and then that's it. They're not, you can't control them anymore. Someone's going to have a different relationship.
Forgive me, because I might start to sound a bit pretentious now, but there is sort of like a fundamental belief that I hold about art work and art making in general, which I think is really important. And that is that the viewer is involved in the making of the art. And this relates to all forms of art. I mean, there's filmmakers and directors in history who have commented on the same thing, like Eisenstein, for example. If you'll permit me to go there, Eisenstein was a Soviet filmmaker, and he talked about how the audience of the film were co-creators. And various filmmakers have commented on this. You know, the audience is presented with a sequence of images, and maybe something is suggested. But obviously, the audience are going to be reading these images in their own way. They're going to be piecing them together in their own way. So I think with all forms of art, I think an artist is saying something, but then the reader or the viewer is reading it. And that's representative of spiritual practice and spiritual friendship, really, in general, isn't it? We are all bringing our own projections into every relationship we have with people, our own biases, as you've already mentioned, and stuff. So there's no such thing as a clean, I don't know how to put it, but like a clean slate. You know, it's like everyone is bringing their stuff and they're putting it into the pile. How well do you know Jayaraja, Eugene?
Probably only once, when he came to the Buddha Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you've just heard me describe what I see in his expression, but I wonder if there's anything different for you looking. Do you see what I see?
I think sincerity, I think depth, I think someone who definitely takes meditation seriously, but also kind of very light, not like he's kind of like, he's kind of an assuredness. Yeah.
Hmm.
True confession time. Did anybody find themselves being comparative when they looked at their own image compared to other people's images? Did you flick through the book and think, like looking along the line of people meditating opposite you, did you think, oh, they look like they're really doing it and I'm like not doing it, or any of that stuff? Anything came in when you looked at others?
I definitely did, because a lot of the images of people smiling, and even on the front cover, she's looking very, very composed. And when I first flicked through the book at the Buddha Center, I flicked through, mine is, I think it's last. And it's really, like I said, very serious and kind of slightly disconcerted. And so, yeah, it's, I think you were talking about the impressions and views we about ourselves and then project on other people. I think it's really interesting how even looking through this, something like this book can bring up all that stuff. But when I did first look at my image in the book, yes, there was the comparison, oh my God, why do I look like that? But also how Hartley's done this book is really compassionate and really genuine. And there's like a sense of self-kindness maybe I have towards myself in that way when I look at the photo. And I should also say that I don't hate my photo at all. I really, really like it. I like how I look.
Well, I'm glad to hear you like how you look. It's a great photograph. And I'm guessing it didn't get chosen to be the last picture by mistake.
The funny thing is, I mean, you know, you say you're comparing yourself to how these other people look in their photos, but I mean, this is just one snapshot from, I mean, Jayaraja sat for 40 minutes. Most of them sat for at least 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Jayaraja might have been looking like that at that moment, but you don't know. He might have been scrunching his face in agony for the other 39 minutes. You know.
How did you decide, Hartley? How did you decide which shots to use for the final one?
Yeah, well, some people provided me with quite a mixture to choose from of expressions, and some people it really was just the same thing the whole way through. I can believe it. And for me, that's a sign of mature practice. But, you know, again, that's just what I'm projecting on. Well, I suppose visual interest was one thing. If someone's got a particularly striking expression, that's something that, you know, warrants being included. But also subtlety at the same time. I think overall, I was trying to get a balance throughout the book. There might have been another photograph of Eugene that maybe on its own I would have preferred compared to the one I chose. But within the context of the whole collection of images, drawing comparisons between the images in the book was a very deliberate thing. Basically looking at it as a collection of images rather than lots of individuals, not picking the best one from each one.
When you describe it, it sounds like somewhere, I'm sure not necessarily formed in words, you're telling us a sort of story arc about meditation itself. You've got this bunch of images and you want to make something that's got integrity. It's got a kind of beginning, a middle and an end, even if it's an open-ended end. And in a way, you must have been working to some intuitive sense of what it was you wanted to capture overall in making those choices. The reason it's in my mind is because we just did another podcast, which will come out before this one, with three painters, three people in Tridatna who are practicing painters, like artists. And it was really fascinating just listen to them talk partly about their materials and the connection between the sort of physicality of their materials and their Buddhist practice, but also all the tensions and questions that have come up for them over the years about, am I a Buddhist? Am I an artist? How do those two things relate? Do they relate? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There is a kind of intuitive thread, presumably, that you're following in a project like this. The work's making you, you're making the work. Has that been impacted by doing this project, your sense of yourself as a working Buddhist artist or a working artist Buddhist or whatever it is?
Absolutely. I mean, as we've already talked about quite a bit, the whole process of creating this project and capturing the images just drew my attention to my relationship with the people that I'm working with and the impact that I have and the whole context has on them. So this awareness of how I impact people. So I was very conscious about the way that I spoke to people when we set up and how I try to invite people in and about holding the space. And yeah, I mean, I think it's quite easy to imagine the implications that that would have on my broader practice or on one's broader practice and spiritual practice. I think it does capture quite a range. I mean, it couldn't by any means exhaustively capture the full range of experience that can be had in meditation. But I think there is range for sure. There's definitely an emotional range.
See, now I'm thinking we should do another website where we get all the pictures of Eugene, all the pictures of Maitri Jyoti, all the pictures of Agra. What is that? Is that a different story when you look at the kind of film strip?
Yeah, well, that would be funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be really interesting. I wouldn't oppose to that.
Yeah.
Has anybody else seen other pictures of them? So have you only seen the shot that's in the book?
I've only seen the book.
Oh, I can feel a sequel coming on.
Just to go back to looking at the book generally, I felt it was quite a privilege actually just to have that opportunity to just sit with other meditators in that way. It's a very unusual privilege to be able to witness other meditators. You've given permission to have that engagement with somebody sitting in meditation. I know quite a few of the people in the images, and just to kind of sit with them in that way was, yeah, delightful. Mm.
Yeah, there were three people, I think, used to work at Dharma Chakra who were in the book. It was very nice seeing people I really knew, whose faces I've looked at every day for, you know, some years, and seeing them really differently in a new light in all sorts of senses. It was really, really fantastic to see that. I also felt very grateful. I get that sense, badger of privilege, where you sort of think this is quite rare to see people in this way. It did make me value more just that everyday thing of it's a real privilege to meditate with people, and much rarer than we think.
Well, I think, well, in terms of meditation, we often don't talk about our inner life. We don't often talk about our meditation. So this is like another way of communicating through the body, through the face, our meditation. So I kind of value it for that as well. It's like another way in, isn't it? We're talking about our meditation, like you might do in a one-to-one meditation review with someone with more experience than yourself, but we're talking in a still, even more still way. And you've witnessed that. And then we share about that. So it's another way of sharing that part of our lives, really, which doesn't happen in society. It doesn't always happen in our Buddhist movement. There's not lots of space to talk about meditation practice.
I mean, there is an interaction going on between the image and the person looking at the image here, isn't there? And I found it an enormous privilege to be able to see the vulnerability that's on a lot of these people's faces. Yeah. And you could even say that possibly we're seeing something in someone's inner world that they don't even know is there, you know, because we're seeing something on their face. But there is a lot of vulnerability in a lot of these images, which I feel honored to have been let into, to be allowed to witness so sort of consciously. And obviously everyone else that sees these images. Yeah, I do think it takes real courage and openness to do that, to put yourself on display like that.
Well, well done, all of you, for volunteering to do this. It is a real gift, actually, to see this book. We're going to put in the notes where you can buy the book. We'll put up some images so you can see. The images really are beautiful. You know, there are so many photographs. I don't know how many photographs are taken every day. It's more than a billion or something. But these are definitely works of art. They're very, very absorbing photographs. It made me think of that thing about samadhi itself or dhyana as absorption. It's a very easy book to get absorbed in. You could just sit and look at somebody's face for ages. It's not moving. In the traditional sense of movement anyway, I think there is a lot of movement in the images. There's a lot of expression, but they're very, very easy to feel connected to as images. So I guess that is the value in them from a reader's point of view, is there's a kind of unique experience that you can't really get even looking at them on a screen, I don't think. There's something particular about holding it in your hand and looking at these people and the gift of their lives, as it were. It's very beautiful. Thank you, Hartley, for making the work and for sharing it with us. And thanks, Eugene, Maitri Jyoti Bhadra, for being prepared to come and talk about it. I'm glad it wasn't an ordeal in the end. It sounds actually like a really rich experience that contributes something to your Dharma life. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk further with Hartley in detail, because I haven't had this conversation individually with you, Hartley. You know, to have this as a facilitated conversation in a way has been very exciting, great. You know, it opens it up much more fully, my kind of relationship to that. And also, you know, I have to add, you know, Hartley's just joined the Bristol Buddhist Centre team as a communication manager. So that creativity that he's brought to his artwork and various projects, he is now bringing into the Bristol Buddhist Centre. So I'm very excited and even challenged, maybe, by this new development. It's fantastic.
Thanks, Vajra. I mean, I've definitely really enjoyed looking at the images with you guys and being able to like look at the picture and talk with you about it with the book in our hands right now. I mean, that's been fantastic. So, yeah. Thanks.
Well, thanks very much to you, Eugene, for showing up. Your first Chiranda podcast, at least. That's exciting.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for interviewing me and for everyone being a part of this. Yeah.
And thanks to you too, Maitri Jyoti. It's been delightful to see you. Looking forward to seeing you in real life soon.
Yeah, thank you. It's really good to get a sense of your thinking behind it and your artistry, actually. Because we wouldn't, like Badger said, we wouldn't necessarily have had this conversation. So it's kind of precious to explore it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Badra. Thank you, DJ Badger, which is your super alter ego. I don't know if we've got a link for DJ Badger that we can put in the show notes, but if we do, it's going to be there, folks. Yeah, thanks for showing up in your 16-year-old form and talking to us about your meditation.
Great, thank you.
He doesn't know what to say.
Yo, dear, he doesn't know what to say to that. Moving swiftly on.
No, I've just shrunk back into my adolescent state.
My work here is done. And thank you, Hartley, again, just for the generosity of sharing this work in this way. It's just a delight. And yeah, I look forward to many more of these little occasional collaborations every so often. You're a real treasure.
Thank you. Yeah, and obviously, you know, the project wouldn't exist without the people that were involved. It's not just me that's made it.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody who allowed themselves to be photographed for the beautiful Portraits of Samadhi book. Please do buy a copy. I'm sure it will support Hartley in some sort of way, or somebody in some sort of way. If you want to tell us what you think about it, you can always drop us a line, let us know how you found the images. We'll be back with another episode of the podcast relatively soon. That's what I'm going to say, relatively soon. I can't be any more precise than that. It'll be another story, no doubt, of creativity and joy, even delight on the Dharma path. But for now, thanks very much, and we'll see you again soon.